Herzlich willkommen zum Praxisflüsterer Podcast. Mein heutiger Gast ist Dr. Christian Coachman. Dieses Interview habe ich auf Englisch geführt. This interview is conducted in English. Please do not be surprised if the outro as well as the partner reference to BFS are in German. I'm very happy to welcome Dr. Christian Coachman. He is dentist, dental technician, and the inventor of digital smile design. He's chatting with me about his great journey from becoming a technician, a dentist, moving to the United States, working at Dr. Goldstein, back then one of the most famous dentists in the world, then become kind of a gypsy dentist in Europe, working all over the places, and then finally established in 2014 the digital smile design in Madrid. Christian is a very progressive cosmopolitan, and he shared with me so many insights of the dental technician, why his heart is to 100% dental technician, why his journey ended up in becoming a full service provider for helping the dentist to create a great smile for their patients. It's very interesting. There are already working more than 130 people for digital smile design all over the world. He's flying all over the world, so I'm very happy to catch him up and to have him on my show. Enjoy it. Enjoy my bad English and his great English and have fun. Herzlich willkommen zum Praxisflüsterer Podcast Staffel 4 Internationale Legenden. Ich porträtiere die erfolgreichsten Geschäftsleute, Funktionäre und Wissenschaftler aus der dentalen Welt. Sie geben mir exklusive Einblicke in ihr Leben. Sie verraten mir, wie sie dorthin gekommen sind, wo sie heute stehen und welche Pläne sie für die Zukunft haben. Lerne von den Big Playern der Dentalbranche und werde mit deiner Praxis noch erfolgreicher. Partner der Staffel ist die BFS. My guest today is Christian Coachman, and I'm very happy to have you on my show. Hey, Christian, nice to meet you on my show. I'm very happy to have you here.
It's my pleasure. Great pleasure to be here. Very grateful for your invitation. I know you have an amazing crowd listening to you. So hello to all my dear colleagues from Germany. Hopefully we will share some good insights over here.
I'm very sure about it. I think that a lot of my audience is already aware about you and the digital smile design, where we will talk later about it. But let's start from the beginning. Please tell me, who are you and where you're from?
I'm originally from São Paulo, Brazil, where I was born and grew up and did my whole education there at the University of São Paulo, one of the main dental schools in Latin America. Became a dentist and a dental technician, but worked for 20 years as a dental technician, a classic handmade analog dental technician. My work as a dental technician allowed me to travel all over the world. I was lucky enough to work with some of the most well-known dentists in the world, starting in US and then moving to Europe, and having amazing years in Europe, in US with Team Atlanta, basically, people like Tal Moore and Jonathan Levine, Goldstein, Garbin, Salama, and then going to Europe and working closely with Eric Van Duren, Nitzan Bichaccio, Mauro Fradiani, Galip Gurel, Andrea Ricci, and others. And then during those days, starting to develop my lecturing career, that became my main passion: communication, teaching, speaking, and in parallel, creating the concept of DSD. And then the last decade, basically working in the DSD project.
But I need to understand, you were a dental technician first, and then you became a dentist. So I think it's very important to understand your time as a dental technician and why you started up to be a dental technician and then study dental medicine.
Actually, the sequence is slightly different. I first entered dental school in 94, and then my father, when he was young, during his dental school, he also worked as a technician for my grandfather. And my grandfather also did the same during dental school. He also worked as a dental technician for his older brother that was a dentist. So my father gave me the suggestion, you know, why don't you start doing lab work for me while you are in dental school? Because I think you're going to enjoy it, since I always liked to work with my hands. So in the second year of dental school, I started to do dental technology course in parallel to dental school. And since dental technology is a shorter course, I finished first dental technology. And at the end of dental school, I was already a technician and I was already working for my father and for other dentists. And then I finished dental school, became a dentist, but decided not to practice as a dentist and continue to work as a technician for other dentists.
Okay. Does it help you to build up the DSD system later? Or what do you think is the difference between the scope of a dental technician and the scope of a dentist?
Yeah, of course, this combination of being a dentist but having the background of a technician give you this both sides perspective. And for sure, this perspective allowed me to develop the DSD concept. The DSD concept was born based on my experience of the limitations and mistakes of the interaction between the dentist and the technician. That's how DSD was born, as a bunch of ideas, strategies, and systems to improve the collaboration between dentists and the technician. So that experience was vital for me. I think that every restorative dentist should have a very solid background of the technical work. And I know that some top dental schools in the world, they, at least on the postgrad level, at least, they make restorative dentists really do a lot of lab work. And that is great. I think that is vital. In Brazil, since dental schools don't give a lot of that background, many dentists have this dual degree. It's like a tradition in Brazil. Many technicians become dentists afterwards. And I think this is great. You become, for sure, a better restorative dentist because of that.
What do you think about the vertical expansion from a dentist going to a technician? So what we see in Germany, and I have 3,500 practices in Germany where we help to develop their practice, and a lot of the practices, they expand into the dentition sector. So they do a lot of more work in the practice, what normally the technician is doing, instead of giving that out to outsource it. So they insource it instead of outsourcing. So is this first a danger for the technician? And what do you think, what will the future bring?
Yeah, that's a good question. Of course, you know, I know that in Germany, you have this tradition of many dental offices have in-house labs. From my perspective, it can be great and it can be bad. It's not good or bad. It depends on the model that you build, you know, the business model that you build. I think that the dental work and the dental lab work needs to be seen as two separate business. If they're under the same roof or in separate buildings or separate companies, conceptually, they are separate businesses. So a dentist, if you start doing more restorative work, I know that many dentists, they start to think, I want to bring the lab in-house because I'm going to save money, or I'm not going to spend a lot of money with the lab. And that's not true. You're just bringing the cost under the same roof. Many dentists, they think that as they buy chairside systems, they're going to get rid of the lab. And that's also not true. What you're going to do is that you're going to bring the technician inside your office, but you still have to manage that. The danger here is to see dentists spending more time running their lab than seeing more patients. So you need to have a very clear vision of what you love doing, what you want to do, what you do the best. If you are a great clinician, you want to improve the time with your patients. You want to have more time for your patients. You want to see more patients. So you have to create the business model, analyze the pros and cons before making those decisions. If you have a very good outside lab that is very efficient working with you, you know, this may be better than having an in-house lab that is not that efficient. And if you have an in-house lab, you need to have a minimum volume to justify that. So you need to do the math. You need to write down on a piece of paper and think a little bit more like a businessman than as a dentist when making the decision of doing in-house or outsourcing anything, not only lab work, anything, like outsourcing a management coaching with you, for example. You can hire a better manager as a dentist and start doing many of the things that people are using you to help them. That is a business decision. You need to be smart. You need to put on the paper and you need to do the math. What is better, to hire an expensive manager or to outsource some management coaching? To in-house the marketing or outsource the marketing? To bring the lab in-house, which procedures, how much you want to do in-house, and how much you want to keep outsourcing? You know, do you want to buy a printer and you want to start printing, you know, in-house, but outsourcing all the design and the more complex software work? You know, as we enter the digital lab workflow, you need to make these decisions. And my suggestion is to hold a little bit your dental impulse and wear your business hat to guide you on those decisions.
Okay, very smart answer. But do you see some countries? So you're a cosmopolitan, you live everywhere in the world. So do you see difference between the countries or difference between the states where they furthermore do a lot of more work in the dental office or do a little bit more work in the technician office? Do you see a difference between the countries?
So in Germany, I definitely see this trend of labs and clinics becoming one thing. If they're owned by the dentist or it's a partnership between dentist and technician, we see that. So many of our clients, you know, they have good labs in-house, good technicians in-house, and that's great. In US, that's not a tradition. So dentists, they work with outside labs usually. Very few have in-house labs. And that's okay as well. In the digital world, you know, there's no more problems with addresses. We from Madrid, we work with dentists from all over the world. A smart thing is to start dividing the process of data capturing, data processing, and data manufacturing. You divide it in three and you start to understand that data processing, it's better to outsource for sure. And data manufacturing, you can start bringing in-house because of the evolution of printers that makes the process of manufacturing very simple. So you can start printing many devices first before getting into milling. You know, milling is a very complex business, hard to maintain, hard to organize it, to adjust the machines, things like that. So I think it's a great business model to outsource everything that is related to 3D complex software, design, devices and restorations, and manufacturing with milling. In-house first, printing, start by printing the easy stuff and slowly grow that part in-house. And of course, invest on data acquisition. That's where the dentist should invest in technology.
Okay, so when I listen to you, I feel like two hearts in one chest. So are you a little bit more a technician or a little bit more a dentist?
100% more a technician. That's how my brain works much more. Of course, I'm a technician, very passionate for treatment planning. So treatment planning and designing and manufacturing. That's how my whole life I helped my dentists, my clients, you know, helping them with the comprehensive interdisciplinary treatment planning view, since modern treatment planning is facially driven. And that means that it starts with smile design, and smile design is usually done by the technician. So that is how I connected facial analysis, smile design, and functional interdisciplinary treatment planning, and then helping the dentist to guide the process of executing these processes, and then coming back at the end to manufacture the final restorations.
Okay. I'm very impressed about the way you went through a lot of different countries and a lot of different cultures. So as we recognized in our talk before the interview, we were a couple of months the same time in Atlanta. You've been working with Dr. Goldstein. I've worked at the German-American Chamber of Commerce. So What do you think is the difference between South America and Middle America, so the United States? So did you have a lot of problems get into the American culture to work in such a, we both know the city of Atlanta, 77% colored people. Back then we had with Shirley Franklin, we had a major, she was a woman. And back then, 20 years ago, she was a woman and she was colored and she was a wonderful person. So it was such, for me as a European, it was so different to Hamburg, where we come from. Did you have the same feeling it's different to where you are from?
Yes, of course, it's different. Brazil has a big influence from US, but also from Europe. So we grew up in Brazil in a very mixed society, you know, much more than Europe, much more than US. And Latin culture also makes you very flexible. So for us, is I think it's easier. You know, we go anywhere, we adapt, we connect, we are flexible with these traditions. So, and on top of that, of course, you know, my family background is also from US. So I have some kind of, not my fathers and grandfathers are all Brazilians, but Coachman comes from US. So we had some kind of still reminiscent of American culture inside us somehow. So adaptation was easy, you know, was the fact that, you know, we had a city like Atlanta with a lot of colored people. Also in Brazil, it's similar. So also normal for us, you know. In terms of dentistry, there was a little bit of an adaptation because I believe Brazilian dentistry, it's a little bit in between Europe and US. We have a lot of influence actually from German dentistry, German technology in Brazil, technicians with high level skills in terms of making things a little bit more natural, very functionally driven, and US definitely less, you know, a lot of cosmetics, a lot of aesthetics, artificial looking smiles. But, you know, I was able to adapt. I was lucky that in US I worked with Team Atlanta, that was a very cosmopolitan dental office. So it allowed me to work my functional principles, interdisciplinary treatment planning, more natural designs, and mixed with the culture in US of perfect aesthetics. So it was a nice experience for me.
So you worked as a technician in Atlanta with Dr. Goldstein. I think you were the leader of his laboratory.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So you did that for 4 years, right?
More than 4 years. Yeah. Almost five. Yeah.
Okay. And what was then? What happened after you've been like from 2004 to 2008 or 2009 in Atlanta? Why did you decide to leave Atlanta? You're some of the very few who ever left Atlanta because it's such a great city. So why did you leave Atlanta and where did you go from there?
Yeah, I had a great time there, you know, personally and professionally. It's where my professional career really exploded. Not only because the dental office at that time, Goldstein, Garber & Salama, was probably the most well-known dental office in the world. So it was a great honor, and it opened many doors, but also because they were all very well-known international speakers. So they allowed me to start nurturing my next great passion, that is communication and lecturing. So over there, I was able to improve my lecturing skills and start getting some invitations, and I started to lecture in Europe. And then I started to meet great doctors in Europe and started to get invitations to perform cases in Europe and develop projects in Europe. And at one point in 2008, you know, I started to work half and half, US and Europe. And I decided that I wanted to really invest on my career internationally, so I couldn't be anymore just a regular technician for them and stay on the bench doing the cases. And of course, I kept a beautiful relationship with them, but decided to move on and explore the whole world. So that's the reason why in 2008, 2009, I started to kind of live in Europe. I would go to Europe and stay a few months there working and then back to US. And then my family decided that it was better to go back to Brazil if I was going to be traveling so much that they wanted to be back close to family in Brazil. So family moved to Brazil and I was mainly in Europe back and forth. And that's the reason why I had to stop working as the main ceramist, the main technician at Goldstein Garben Salama.
Okay. So how many years did you live in back in Brazil and when did you move and why to Madrid?
Liebe Hörerinnen und Hörer, an dieser Stelle möchten wir unser spannendes Gespräch kurz unterbrechen und einmal Danke zu sagen. BFS Health Finance ist einer der führenden Finanzexperten im Dentalmarkt und vor allem ein ganz wichtiger Unterstützer dieses Podcasts. Ich bedanke mich bei den Möglichmachern der BFS für den Support des Praxisflüsterer Podcasts. Auch diese Staffel erscheint auf der BFS Weitergeht's Plattform. Link in den Shownotes. Schaut dort gerne mal vorbei. Dort gibt es viele spannende Infos rund um den Praxisalltag. Aber natürlich erst nach dem Ende dieser Folge. Jetzt geht's weiter. Viel Spaß.
So in 2009, I moved from Atlanta to Brazil. And then I started to go to Europe and spend a lot of months every year in Europe. So it was Brazil, Europe. From 2009 till 2004, that was my career. I used to say like a gypsy technician. My lab was in my suitcase and I was traveling around the world literally and spending 1 or 2 weeks in each clinic with amazing times, you know, working with amazing people and in parallel lecturing. So it was a very, I was basically living in airplanes, airports and hotels from 2009 till 2014. In 2014, we opened the DSD Planning Center in Madrid. That was a big moment for us when DSD became a real business, a real company. It was not only me lecturing. It was a company, it was a service, it was a lab, and we started in 2014 that. So my brothers moved to Madrid to run the business here while I was continuing to travel all over the world. So from 2014 till 2019, I was not anymore lecturing as a technician. I was lecturing on the DSD concept for the DSD company. And then in 2019, the project of DSD grew so much that I decided that I needed to move from Brazil to Madrid. And in 2019, since 2019, I've been living in Madrid.
I think that was an interesting time. So even 2008, 2009, remember back then was world economy crisis, one of the last world economy crisis. And I think it was a pretty tough time back then. And as far as my memories are right, for the German dentists in that time, I already had my company here. We had no problems with the German dentist, so they didn't earn less. But I know that in a lot of countries all of the, over the world, in the bench, the dentists didn't earn that much as they earned like 2006, 2007, and then there was a big dip. And so I think it was a pretty tough time to make this journey back then. So like 15 years later, everything is forgotten, but I still remember these days. So, but why did you go to Madrid as your headquarter of DSD? And why not Sao Paulo, Atlanta, Hamburg? Why not Hamburg?
It could be because that, in fact, you know, Germany was one of my main countries as a speaker, as a technician. From 2009 to 2014, one of the places that I was lecturing the most at the beginning of DSD, giving DSD courses, I had collaboration with important German companies. You know, I was working a lot with Evoclar as a KOL, a lot of, with Anaxdent, where I developed products with them, you know, working with Nobel Biocare at that time and going a lot to Germany. But what happened was that in 2013, I met a business guy, a Spanish business guy based in Madrid. That was really somebody very important in my career because he was the first person to give me the business perspective of dentistry. He was a very successful businessman in dentistry. He owned several different companies in dentistry, and he kind of sponsored the opening of the DSD Planning Center. And of course, because of that, he was based in Madrid. We started the project here in Madrid. After a few years, he left the DSD project, but then we were already here and the office was growing, and Madrid is an amazing city as well to live. My brothers were loving being here. Families were happy. It is a great balance in Madrid between quality of living, but it's not very expensive to run a business here. So we realized it was a very interesting, geographically also a good position. So we decided to stay.
Yeah, okay. So we have to mention that you needed to learn Spanish, right?
Yeah, Brazil speaks Portuguese. Of course, we speak Portuguese. We are surrounded by countries that speak Spanish. So, and Spanish is very similar to Portuguese. So it's not that difficult for us. Yes, it's learning a new language. I'm still learning it, but I already speak Spanish enough to be able to even give lectures in Spanish and live over here with no problem. But again, you know, coming from Latin America, Spanish language is kind of a second language for us. And we are just flexible. We go with the flow and we face the challenges in a different way. But I think it's fine.
You're a very brave man, have a brave family, so it's very tough, your journey. So
we move where the opportunity shows, we go.
Great. So the Spanish guy was some kind of what we call now like startup angel, business angel. He helped you to found the company back then. So how many people work for the DSD 2021, 2022, so right now?
So right now we have 130 people, the whole company.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
We have our headquarter here in Madrid, where most of the people are, but we also have an office in Rio in Brazil. We have an office in Miami, and we have an office in Shanghai, China. But most of the people here in Madrid. In Madrid, we have the whole administration, the marketing agency, since we became a full service marketing agency as well. The planning center, that is our main thing. The DSD lab that has here in Madrid and in Rio. And also the whole education team that is the core of our business as well.
Okay. So would you explain what exactly are you doing right now? You say you do some marketing thing, you do some treatment thing, you have the DSD. Can you separate that and explain it?
Yes. So in very briefly, the best way to explain it is that DSD concept started with me as a technician, teaching people how to improve the workflow of a smile rehabilitation. How to be more efficient rehabilitating smiles. Naturally, in my lectures, I started to realize that just explaining technical steps was not enough. And I started to get a lot into communication, human behavior, the psychology of the patient, case acceptance. And then I started also to share some concepts in terms of marketing, on how to promote yourself as a smile rehabilitator, how to become a storyteller, how to tell stories for patients, but also as social media was growing in social media. And then, of course, started to organize better the treatment planning part, the diagnostic part with technology. So the DSD course became something multifactorial, as I say. So we were teaching diagnostics and treatment planning with digital, smile design and restorative workflow with digital, creating perceived value, communication, case acceptance with digital, team building, team communication, also empowered with digital tools, leadership, strategies. So the concept started to evolve. What I realized around 2013 was that most of the people coming to my courses were very excited with the course at the end, but very few were doing something with the course information. And after 1 year, nobody was really implementing the ideas, even though they were enjoying the ideas. So I realized that I needed to start building services to help people after the course. So the first service was the planning center to help dentists benefit from digital without having to buy, neither learn digital. So the planning center was doing everything for the dentists on the diagnostics, smile design, and treatment planning part, and providing these services to doctors. Then after that, I realized that I needed to go back and reopen my lab, because my initial idea was to work in collaboration with local labs and only do the digital part and then share files and have the local labs manufacture everything for the dentist. But the local labs were not understanding the concepts. Things were not happening. So we had to reopen a fully digital lab, full service from A to Z to serve people after the course. Then we realized that doctors were having trouble to explain these things to the patient and to differentiate themselves because they were using these services. So we opened a full service marketing agency to support our clients to tell their patients why they were special because they were using our ideas. Then we realized that another bottleneck was to onboard the team, was to train the team to perform this, since the dentist was feeling lonely and was not able to convince the team and convince the specialist to incorporate this. So we became a consulting company and a training company to train assistants and staff members on the whole digital workflow. So basically, we had the marketing agency, the consulting team training services, the lab manufacturing services, and the planning center, diagnostics, planning, and software services. And that became the full spectrum. Then what happened was that demand started to grow, and we built a certification process because we couldn't work with everybody, and we wanted to only work with people that were really using the full system. So we developed the DSD Clinic certification project. It's like almost like a light franchise co-branding thing where the dentist owns completely their business, but we provide this package of services plus the co-branding of their clinics. And this became our main project today. The DSD Clinic is our main project where people from all over the world, I would say around 1,000 people per year, come to our courses. From these 1,000 doctors that come to our courses, around half of them enroll in our online mentoring process that usually takes a year. From this mentoring process, they get access to some of our services. So our services today are closed. You cannot be a dentist and just work with us. You need to come to the course and then do what we call the mastership, get the mentoring. And then after that, many doctors hire our consulting services. And then after that, around 50 doctors per year enroll to our full package, that is the DSD Clinic. So they become a DSD Clinic, and then they can take advantage of everything, marketing, team building, and planning center, and lab. So this is our funnel today, and the DSD Clinics project is our main project. So we have around 70 clinics all over the world certified, and around 50 clinics, new clinics coming per year. We have around 400 doctors per year on the mentorship process, and we have around 1,000 doctors giving the first step, that is joining our DSD Residency One program, that is the gateway to this whole journey.
Okay. So I can imagine that you, as soon as you become a DSD clinic, you have the opportunity to choose out of one of the modulars, or can take all of the modulars. You're not forced to use everything. You can say, okay, I need some little help back in here and may some help here, and then I can provide the service for my patients. Is that right?
This exactly that. The services are not mandatory. We actually stimulate our DSD clinic owners to work with their local labs. We want to support them. We want to do for the dentist everything he doesn't want to do, everything he believes we can do better than he can do with his local lab or with his local marketing agency, for example, you know. So we fill in the gap. Of course, that the core of the collaboration is the planning center, since we are the first and still the only interdisciplinary digital planning center in the world. What we provide in the planning center, nobody else does. So usually the doctors, at least they use that regularly. But we are completely open to help dentists to start bringing in-house any piece of the puzzle. So nothing is mandatory, but is exclusive to them.
Okay, sure. Got it. Very smart. I think it's very helpful for the dentist to get the information, to get the education they needed to explain it to a patient. As we know the funnel, it's always you need the education, you need the usage, the comfort, you need to be it with 120% to tell your patient for 80% or 70%. If you just know it for like 70 or 60%, then you will never talk with a patient about it because you feel uncomfortable when there is an unexpected question and then you're bubbling or and you sound like me talking English. So like the German dentist, you say you make the treatment plan. Is the treatment plan then in Spanish or in English, or do you provide them in German as well?
So the whole company, even though we are in Madrid, the whole company runs in English. Everything we do is in English. All our reports and projects and documents, everything we do for the dentist is in English. In Germany, we are very happy to see the growth of DSD, and we are getting some very good German dental offices joining our project. We are building a German team over here. So we are starting with German customer support, German clinical consultants, translating into German our website and some of our reports. So we are investing on that right now, even though most of the doctors that we work, they all speak German. They all speak English, even in the German ones. But, you know, for the staff, since the DSD concept, the staff plays a key role. So we are investing on German-speaking team members because of that.
What is the unfair advantage of the DSD system?
The unfair advantage? I think we became curators of trends. You know, people see us as a safe hub to share ideas. So we are constantly connected to the next step. We are exposed to so many smart people that are coming to us saying, "Christian, look at this new idea. What do you think?" You know, they consult with us. Actually, big companies, they actually consult officially with us. They pay us for consultancy in terms of how can I improve my product? What is the next trend? How can I become more meaningful, more useful to my customers? So major companies, they do hire us for that. So we are exposed to big companies, smart R&D teams, to small companies, to inventors, to creative dentists. And many of them, they come to us to share these ideas. So we are constantly connected with the future of what is going to happen. So I think this gives us an advantage in terms of how to adapt our strategies and how to understand what is the next need that is coming around the corner.
Okay, so in your software, I already saw your software a couple of times in some clinics I know very well, and they are very successful using DSD system for the planning, for the visualization, for the patients. And what do German dentists, what they need to do first to become a member? As far as I understand it right, they need to first make the course for like in the mentorship for like about a year. Then they have the certification. Then they got the access to the DSD system from you. Is this the right understanding?
So a very good question, important question there. First thing that people get a little bit confused, you know, DSD is not a software, right? Everything we use several different softwares for all the things that we do, and they're all coming from third-party companies. The only software that we have that we own is a very simple application for iPad to do simple 2D smile simulations. And that's the only thing that we owned. So, and it's not even mandatory for people to do DSD to actually use this application. There's many other solutions that you can use for that matter. But most of the doctors are using because it's a cool, simple little application to start the smile design journey.
Exactly that thing, what they use to talk with patients. I know clinics, big clinics, who use that for every patient like 100 times a day.
Yes, yes. It's simple. It's fast. You know, it takes a few minutes. You do it with your fingers. It provides the chance for you to show your artistic smile design skills in front of the patient. It allows you to do a sketch, an initial draft of your idea to show to the lab, to connect with the digital workflow later on. So it's a cool little first step that people are doing. This is the only proprietary technology that we have. Everything else, it's from third parties, companies that we use. So we use softwares for management, for marketing, for social media, for smile design, for diagnostics, for treatment planning, for CAD/CAM, for restorative, for printers, for the designing, all kinds of devices. Since we are completely interdisciplinary, we create devices for all disciplines, for all specialties in the concept of guided dentistry. So this is the first thing that I think is important to make it clear, meaning what makes us unique is not the fact that we developed a software that we own, but what makes us unique is first, as I said, the vision of the new trends, but also our expertise in smile design and treatment planning. Our expertise on training people to become great treatment planners and great smile designers. This is the reason why big companies with all the money in the world didn't become us, you know, because everybody's looking at us. You know, all the big companies are looking to DSD and saying, let's see what they're going to do next. Let's see how we can do what they do. And they didn't yet get into the business of interdisciplinary diagnostics and interdisciplinary treatment planning. Just because it's very hard, it's very human related, it's very hard to scale. What we have here, we have high-end dentists, we have super good clinicians that for some reason decided that they wanted to put their clinics aside a little bit and they wanted to work on a treatment planning center to help other dentists treatment plan better their cases. So the philosophy of comprehensive treatment planning and the philosophy of facially driven smile design and the know-how of using technology to streamline these processes and convert this into appliances and into final restorations. Anybody can copy this, but it's not that easy to copy and to scale this. So this is our protection, let's say.
Okay. Great, Christian. Thanks so much for sharing the journey with me and with our listeners. So I have 10 quick questions at the end, and then we are through. Are you ready?
Fantastic.
Okay. So research, library or internet?
Internet, unfortunately.
Okay. Investment, saving book or share? I don't know if you guys even got a saving book. Do you know, is this kind of a saving book in Spain? Or
no.
Okay. It's a typical German thing, I guess. It's they don't put money in the shares. They put it in the saving book. It's like to let it on the account. It's kind of insider joke in Germany. Did you ever heard from shares or are you still with a saving book?
I love the word share. So anything that has sharing, I usually pick that.
Okay, great. Getting around far away, train or plane?
I love trains. I love traveling by train.
Do you work on train?
I work on train. I meditate. I think. I organize my life when I'm inside.
Okay. So get around nearby, bicycle or e-scooter?
Bicycle for sure.
Housing, city or country?
For living, city.
Okay. And for vacation, coast or mountain?
I love both, but I think I love a little bit more the countryside, maybe.
Okay. Cinema, action or drama?
Anything that is related to true story. Usually drama.
Okay. Do you like the Casa de Papel? Netflix, did you see it?
I saw the first season. Yeah, it was fun. I'm trying to watch less and less Netflix, but I did see that one. Yeah.
So purchasing Amazon or on-site? Downtown.
On site.
Okay, always on site. So Christian, thanks so much. And for a last couple of words, it is very interesting to see that you and your family are in the Guinness Book of Records. So how does that become?
Yeah, that's something we are very proud of since dentistry is our life. I usually joke that dentistry in our family is a genetic disease. We cannot get rid of it. So me and my brother, we are actually the sixth generation. And according to the Guinness Book, this is the longest nonstop sequence of a family in dentistry in the world. So that's why we are featured in the Guinness Book. So the first one was my great-great-great-grandfather in 1850. So last year, we completed 170 years in dentistry.
Oh, great. I hope that this disease will keep on moving in the seventh generation as well.
We hope. That's why we make a lot of kids. We increase the chances.
Do you have children? Do you have kids?
I have four.
Four? Okay. Same than me. So... Oh, we have two things in the same. Four kids and lived in Atlanta at the same time. So it was unfortunate.
And a great name.
Huh? And the same name. And it's funny, we talked before that we may saw each other in the Virginia Highlands in Atlanta because we were always out there on Tuesday night. Close spots. So, Christian, it was very pleasure to have you on my show. I know that you fly around the world, and I think next week you're in San Antonio and Miami?
Washington, D.C. and San Antonio.
Washington, D.C. So keep staying healthy, have a great Christmas time, and hope to see you soon.
The same here. Thank you so much for having me. It was a great pleasure, great honor. And hopefully we will meet again in person soon.
Wie hat euch die Episode gefallen? Schreibt uns gerne eine E-Mail oder bewerte uns bei Apple Podcast. Wenn ihr auf dem Laufenden bleiben wollt zu den Themen Praxisgründung, Praxismanagement, QM, MDR, über die Personalführung zur Praxisabgabe, dann abonniert unbedingt unsere Newsletter und bleibt so mit uns in Kontakt. Alle Links findet ihr in den Shownotes. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Euer Christian Henrizi.